by the troubles of material existence. Aditaha, disturbed. Apanaha, sometimes having gained. Vipanaha, sometimes having lost. Yatra, in which. Yaha, who. Tam, him. Uhabhava, or. Itaraha, someone else. Tatra, thereupon. Visvijja, giving up. Jatam, jatam, newly born. Upadhyaya, accepting. Shochan, lamenting. Mukyan, being illusioned. Vibhyat, fearing. Vivadan, sometimes exclaiming loudly. Krandan, sometimes crying. Asamrishyan, sometimes being pleased. Gayan, singing. Nayamanaha, being bound. Sadavarjitaha, being away from saintly persons. Na, not. Eva, certainly. Avartite, achieves. Ajapi, even until now. Yataha, from whom? Arabdaha, commenced. Eshaha, this. Naraloka, of the material world. Sa'artaha, the self-interested living entities. Yam, whom? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hudvanaha, of the path of material existence. Param, the other end. Upadishyanti, saintly persons indicate. So translation, the path of this material world is full of material miseries and various troubles disturb the conditioned souls. Sometimes he loses and sometimes he gains. In either case, the path is full of danger. Sometimes the conditioned soul is separated from his father by death or other circumstances. Leaving him aside, he gradually becomes attached to others such as his children. In this way, the conditioned soul is sometimes illusioned and afraid. Sometimes he cries loudly out of fear. Sometimes he is happy maintaining his family. And sometimes he is overjoyed and sings melodiously. In this way, he becomes entangled and forgets his separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead since time immemorial. Thus, he traverses the dangerous path of material existence, and on this path, he is not at all happy. Those who are self-realized simply take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order to get out of this dangerous material existence. Without accepting the devotional path, one cannot get out of the clutches of material existence. The conclusion is that no one can be happy in material life. One must take to Krishna consciousness. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. By thoroughly analyzing the materialistic way of life, any sane man can understand that there is not the least happiness in this world. However, due to continuing on the path of danger from time immemorial and not associating with saintly persons, the conditioned soul, under illusion, wants to enjoy this material world. Material energy sometimes gives him a chance at so-called happiness, but the conditioned soul is perpetually being punished by material nature. It is therefore said, Dunja, Janae Raja Yena Narite Hubaya. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhalila, 20th chapter, text 118. Materialistic life means continuous unhappiness, but sometimes we accept happiness as it appears between the gaps. Sometimes a condemned person is submerged in water and hauled out. Actually, all of this is meant for punishment. But he feels a little comfort when he is taken out of the water. This is the situation with the conditioned soul. All the shastras therefore advise that one associate with devotees and saintly persons, saintly people. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Koi, Lovamatra Sadhu Sangha, Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Koi. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhalila, 22nd chapter, text 54. Even by a little association with devotees, the conditioned soul can get out of this miserable material condition. This Krishna consciousness movement is therefore trying to give everyone a chance to associate with saintly people. Therefore, all the members of this Krishna consciousness society must themselves be perfect sadhus in order to give a chance to fallen conditioned souls. This is the best humanitarian work. So, Om Ganad Timananda Shah, Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam, Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, the happiness being described here in this purport reminds me of one particular saying that someone had about a happy night of sleeping. They said, I had a very happy night. I slept very well last night. I don't remember anything. In other words, happiness is somehow or other forgetting about the misery that we are experiencing in this world. Of course, we have all these impulses that are pushing us to enjoy the senses in different ways. This is, of course, described in the Upadeshamrita. Vacho vegam, anasakrota vegam, jiva vegam, udarapashta vegam. So it's interesting, these things are described as vegams. That means pushings. In other words, when you're being pushed, it's not a very good experience. Just like yesterday, I was at the airport, and I was just trying to make my flight. Somehow or other, I was a little late. And there was a long line for security. And so what happens is that I'm used to the Indian experience, where if you're online, you push. I don't know if any of you understand what I'm talking about. Whereas Americans, they're a little bit different. Americans, you know, they have a little more respect when you're in line. Indians, you just push in. So I was actually pushing the guy in front of me, and he got really angry at me. You know, because naturally I was thinking I'd be there sooner. Which doesn't work, actually, because I was in anxiety. So he got angry. You know, I happened to be pushing on his computer, which has even made it worse. Been pushing on his body. So he got angry, turned around, and said, "Don't you understand? You're not going to get there any sooner." So this pushing, being pushed by someone, is not a very nice experience. Of course, sometimes if you're in illusion and you're being pushed by the person you love, this is like Prabhupada described sometimes, the family members can be described. This is not casting aspersion on any particular individual. It's legal thieves. Like if someone steals from you, you call the police. Prabhupada gave this description of legal thieves. It's in the Bhagavatam. Don't blame me. If someone steals from you, you call the police, and the police come and you say, "This person has stolen from me," or you may even shoot them as they're trying to escape with your money. But if someone who you love steals from you, then you think this is love. This is nectar. It's like when I was young. I always give this example. When I was young, when my father would come home from work, I would steal from him. I'd take all the money in his pockets and everything like that. And then even we had this big piggy bank. It wasn't a pig. It was a big barrel full of money. And I figured out a way to stick a knife in and get all the money out of it. So nobody sent me to jail. It was just they thought, oh, it's so cute how he's done this. Our little boy has stolen from us. So this is the illusion of the world. We're being pushed. So let's say a family member is pushed or steal, or people we love push or steal from us. We think it's love. And so when our body pushes us, we think it's nice. And we actually want to increase the pushing by different means. And we ignore the cruelty that is there when we attempt to fulfill the pushings of the bodies, like, for example, eating meat. I was just hearing something the other day. It was quite interesting. That, talking about culture, we are a Krishna conscious culture, but culture is shaped to a large degree by the eating process. Mm-hmm. Not only what you eat, but when you eat, who you eat with, or if you're a cannibal, who you eat. Like that. So, and there's some very like underlying messages and indoctrination and this consciousness that you may not be aware of when you're engaged in the eating process. I mean, for example, when people eat meat, there's the underlying message that people are getting when they're brought up eating meat from when they're very young, is that we're meant to basically exploit others. And others' feelings or opinions are not so important. Our own personal gratification is the most important thing. So that's the underlying message you're getting when you're eating food that's not offered to the Supreme Personality of God and when you're eating Voga. I mean, it may not be stated. Obviously, your parents didn't tell you that when you sat down to eat your steak or chicken. Actually, every day in America, there's 80 million animals being killed to gratify people's senses. 80 million animals. Can you imagine that? People are so damn selfish. And I was just reading yesterday, someone left me at National Geographic, how people in different parts of the world, in Europe actually, which is where some of us are from, people are just catching these poor little songbirds in the air and cooking them and eating them, just, you know, taking these poor little songbirds. Anyway, so it's really that part of the class, but it's important to understand how the eating process actually instills in people a particular type of consciousness. Just like we eat prasadam, is supposed to instill in us a desire that we're serving the Supreme Personality of God and honoring His remnants. So, getting back to the pushings. So we're being pushed in these different ways by, you know, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udapashta vegam, by the mind, by the belly, the genitals, the tongue, the words. And somehow or other, we're thinking that this pushing process that we're getting from our senses is something that's nectar. You know, so, and we, by the media, by just propaganda in general, we're actually making people think that this is actually the goal of life, to be pushed by these things and attempt to solve the pushes, which doesn't happen. Abhritam gyanami tena gyani non nichivayana kama rupena gontiya dushprena analena cha. It's never satisfied. It burns like fire. So just like yesterday, I was in an airplane and half of the advertisements in the airplane about increasing the pushings. You know, there was something about some place in America. Every edition of the airline magazine has some special place that they're advertising in the United States that they want people to go to on vacation. And most of that's about restaurants. You know, where you can eat, what type of food, whether it's lobsters or this or that. It's all based on increasing the pushing. And then there's advertisements for increasing the lust. There's at least 3 or 4 different matchmaking services there. You've seen that? Matchmaking. And it gives you some hints on how to approach your beloved or someone you want to be your beloved or someone you want to exploit. What to say, what not to say. It was very interesting. I won't tell you what it said to say, what not to say. But it, I mean, so it's all like the mating is there, you know, increasing the pushing, and then there's advertisements, you know, which you get on the internet regularly, and the spam mails, or different types of Viagra, different types of lust drugs. And it's amazing how society, or anger, you know, anger, crota vagum, with these video games. The most popular video game is this Grand Theft Auto, where you get to, like, kill prostitutes and have a relationship with prostitutes and kill the police and steal cars and destroy people. I mean, by the time a child is, like, grows up until they're 18, they've seen, like, 80,000 or more murders. It's amazing, isn't it? So modern society, somehow or other, they're increasing this pushing, and then we're not objecting. We're saying, bring it on. You want more pushing. And the more you get pushed, the more you get disturbed. Your mind is disturbed. And if your mind is disturbed, bhukti mukti siddhi kama sakalaya shanta, then how can you be happy? If you're all the time you're pushed, and that means you're agitated, like that guy who I was pushing. You know, we're so stupid, it would be as if that guy who I was pushing at the airport was saying, you know, keep pushing me. Thank you for pushing me. Can you imagine? If he said that, I would have been very happy. But anyway, because I was the pushing agent. That would be stupid. He said, basically, leave me alone. So we should be like that. You know, leave me alone. Don't push me. We should be like that. What that guy said to me, isn't it? You know, you'll get there in time. Of course, where I want to go is back to God. And we should push to go back to Godhead. That is true. We should really push, but that's another issue. So, how do we get out of this illusion? We've been indoctrinated. That was the point I was making. Indoctrinated since our very birth. That this pushing and this lack of compassion for other living entities is just like life. That's what life is all about. And the only way, as Srila Prabhupada says here very nicely in the purport, is by association with sadhus. Then you wake up. You know, jeev jago, gora chanda pole. You wake up to say, hey, this pushing is not bringing me any happiness, therefore, I mean, because even in Buddhism it's stated, Lord Buddha says, you know, the material world is miserable, the misery is caused by desire, give up the desire, give up the misery. I mean, these are the Four Noble Truths, and the way to give up the desire is the Buddhist path. Of course, we disagree with the last one. In one sense, we may agree, because the Buddhist path is the Eightfold Path of, you know, right living, right thinking, etc. And we define what right living and right thinking is. But the essential thing is to associate with the sadhu. And when you associate with the sadhu, somehow or other, it's like a magical thing. When you hear from the sadhu, that's what it means to associate. Even if you don't know what's happening. I mean, I'll give you some practical examples of that. Not my own life. I actually have one practical example in my own life, but I'll deal with that with Shastric practical examples first. I'll give you 2 examples from the Jiva Dharma. One time there was a Mayavadi, and he was in Varanasi. That's where Mayavadis hang out. That's where they have their Sangha. And they all sit around talking about Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi. One of the most boring things you can think of. Telling you, your spirit soul, you're God, I'm God. You know, pretty static. So, anyway, he was a sannyasi there, you know, very strict sannyasi. was my Kali Yuga sannyasi. So he was very strict sannyasi in Varanasi, and then someone, some Vaishnava had to go walk by chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. I mean, he didn't even meet the guy. I don't want to say guy. Didn't even meet the devotee. All he did was hear the kirtan. This devotee passed by chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasini Gaur Bhaktivinoda Jai Sachinanda Jai Sachinanda. And all of a sudden, you know, he just like started to come to his senses. Really amazing story. Really amazing story. He started to come to his senses, and then he ran, or walked, as the case may be, to Vrindavan, because that's where he heard where all the devotees were. So he went to Vrindavan, and then he discovered that the six Goswamis of Vrindavan had already passed away, and that actually the great devotees, many of the great devotees, they were in Navadweep, actually a place called Godramdweep, which is right where Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house is in Mayapur. I'm sure many of you have been there. So we heard about that, and then he walked all the way across India, just from a little association. It's amazing, isn't it? Just a little association with a devotee, just like 1 minute practically of hearing Lord Chaitanya's name, purely chanted. That's the key. Not impurely chanted by some professional kirtan singer who is just like, doesn't even understand what he's chanting is God's name. He's just chanting it because it gives him happiness. Of course, that may be Namabhas for him. But for us, it's Namaparada. So he goes all the way to Godramdweep in Mayapur. And then he associates with this, he comes, of course, as Babaji, Premadas Babaji. That's a nice name for Babaji, Premadas. That means he's a servant of Prema. So he comes all the way across India, and he's still dressed as a sannyasi. And he approaches this Premadas Babaji, and then Premadas Babaji convinces him of Krishna consciousness by his association. And then he thinks, should I now give up this sannyasi dress? Because in those days, the sannyasi dress was meant only for Mayavadis, and the Vaishnavas, they would dress, when they took the renounced order of life, it was like a Babaji order, they would dress with the gumsha type of thing, like a very, you know, the Babaji type of dress, white. Whereas the sannyasis traditionally would wear saffron, like we're wearing saffron. Actually, this particular style of sannyas in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya was started by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur because he wanted to preach. And he was emulating the sannyas given by the Sri Sampradaya, specifically Ramanujacharya, because Ramanujacharya was very much into preaching too. But traditionally, Vaishnavas didn't wear this type of dress. You know, the sannyas was a little bit different. In fact, sannyasis wouldn't wear sewn clothing. Even vanaprasas, they would wear clothes made of tree bark. You know, what to speak of sannyasis. And sannyasis would generally just have a kamandalu in one hand, and if they're Vaishnavas, a bead bag in the other hand. Very simple, and not even just a cloth for the upper portion of the body. And that was it. They would sleep on the floor. No opulent beds, you know, with space-age foam. Like sannyasis, so-called sannyasis nowadays, like me. So anyway, so he asked Premadas Babaji, should I maintain this sannyas dress or what should I dress like a Vaishnava? And Premadas said, you wait until it's natural that you change, you know, you actually feel inspired. And then you can change if you like. And so that happened eventually. But the point is, it was all from that little bit of association with a Vaishnava. You know, sadhu, that's a perfect example of this. Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoy. Lava Matra means like 1/11th or 1/10th of a second. Can you imagine that? Another example from the Jivadharma, was this example of this devotee. He wasn't a devotee in the beginning, but he was a logician. He was very much into what we call nyaya. Nyaya is one of the darshans, the sadarshans. It basically means logic and reasoning and word jugglery, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very much into before he took sannyas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a nyayaka. He was actually acting like that to show the importance of taking initiation before Lord Chaitanya took initiation from Ishwara Puri. So he was, you know, defeating everybody. He was like one of these conquering pundits, like the one who conquered or attempted to conquer Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and was defeated by Lord Chaitanya, the Digvijay. And so everyone was pretty aggravated with him. And this was roughly 50 years after Lord Chaitanya had disappeared from this world. So then, one of the devotees said to him, actually, there was a greater logician than you. Just a little association with a devotee. And his name was Nimai Pandit. And so he thought, greater than me, Nimai Pandit? And then he... See, just a suggestion from a devotee. It's amazing, isn't it? And so then he was thinking, greater than me, Nimai Pandit. Well, first of all, because Nimai Pandit, that's Lord Chaitanya, was no longer on the planet, there wasn't a sense of rivalry. It's interesting with male psychology. If a man has already passed away, you don't feel he's your rival. But if he's still here on the planet, then if he can preach better than you, do this better than you, chant better than you, you know, whatever, then you feel that mood of competition, which is actually Maya. Because it comes from like the monkeys. Like the monkeys, whoever is the most dominant monkey, he kicks out all the other male monkeys and he takes over. And he becomes the head monkey. So we shouldn't think like monkeys. Anyway, so therefore he started to think, who is this Nimai? Let me just hear about his teachings. So practically speaking, all day and night, he was thinking, Nimai Pandit, Nimai Pandit, Nimai Pandit. Right, chanting it, you know, dreaming about it. Because, you know, basically, if you're into scholarship, you really want to learn from someone who is a better scholar so you can become a better scholar yourself and defeat everybody. I mean, it's not that scholars are free from false ego. I thought that when I went to the university that I would find my professors because they were just interested in knowledge, didn't have any false ego, lust, anger, greed, or any of the other anarthas that harass the conditioned soul. I thought the professors were going to be liberated souls. I mean, that was my illusion. So I went to the university and I discovered the professors were actually just as much in Maya as everybody else. It's just that they use their erudition for their false ego to actually show off. You know, I was amazed, people would memorize or remember all the different names of the authors of the books that they would read, and they would just quote, or they, if it was an art professor, they would say, what do you think about this particular French Matisse's work, or of course, Van Gogh wasn't French. So, what do you think about this? And they would all just like do these analyses and everything like that. So generally, people who are like educated intellectuals are just using their intellectual ability just like a football player uses his muscles to defeat the enemy. It's just another version of a soccer game at the university. That's it. It's another version, you know, one-upsmanship. So therefore, this particular individual, he was thinking, let me become a better person, a better logician or professor, by studying the works of Nimai Pandit. So he was studying the works of Nimai Pandit, chanting. I guess he started to chant Gauranga after some time. Just like we have one disciple who's trying to always trick people into saying Gauranga, Gauranga, Gauranga. And so eventually he said, why the hell am I a logician? I should just like become a devotee. And then he gave all that up. And he became a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, associating with the same group of Vaishnavas in Godramdweep. And he started associating with his sannyasi, who previously was a Mayavadi, and the sannyasi actually got the name Vaishnavadas. And he was able to use his Mayavadi knowledge that he had before, because in Mayavadis they have to become very expert in all the Vedic literatures. And the Vaishnavas used this particular previous Mayavadi sannyasi, whose name now is Vaishnavadas, to preach to everyone who came to challenge them. Was that actually interesting? Very interesting, this book, Jiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because it's, and please correct my French, Tour de Force? Is that how you say? Okay. We've got two devotees who speak French here. We got to confirm with them. It's like a tour de force of the whole Vaishnava philosophy from Sambandha to Abhideya to Prayojana. Sambandha means understanding the relationship between God and the material energy, relationship between God and the jivas, and the relationship between the jivas and the material energy, those three different things. And then Abhideya means, what are you going to do about it? In other words, sadhana bhakti, devotional service, nava bhakti, nine process devotional service. And then finally Prayojana, you know, what happens when you do something about it? Which means going back to Godhead, a spiritual realm. So it's actually a complete elucidation, utilizing these fictional stories that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written about in different interactions between people to illustrate the philosophy. It's a very easy to digest form. We're going to be giving a seminar on that. We're preparing for that seminar right now, but I'm very inspired by that book. Anyway, so those stories illustrate the point of how little association. And just my own practical life, because I never became a devotee, but at least I attempted to join the Krishna conscious movement. But my own practical life, I just remember one time hearing Prabhupada chanting on the radio. You know what a radio is? That's before they had the internet. It's this thing with a dial on it, you know, FM, AM. So they had Prabhupada chanting on the radio, and I heard it, and it just changed my life. Just like, you know, just a few minutes, and I kept listening to the radio then for 10 hours a day until they played it again. And that time I was so enthusiastic to record it, I was just holding my tape recorder getting ready push the record button until they played it again. Finally, they played it again. Boom! You know, it's from that Happening album, and I recorded it, and I played it, and that was, you know, what little association I had in the beginning here in Srila Prabhupada, the pure transcendental sound of Srila Prabhupada. Mm. So anyway, so these are some practical examples of how just a little association can change one's whole life. And then Prabhupada, the final thing Prabhupada says here in the purport is very interesting. All the members of this Krishna Conscious Society must themselves be perfect sadhus in order to give a chance to the fallen conditioned souls. So in other words, if we're not perfect sadhus, then we're really not fulfilling our duty. We're not given the opportunity for people to advance in Krishna consciousness. So what does it mean to be a perfect sadhu? Let's unpack that. Does that mean we have to be absolutely pure devotees right now? Well, that's a long way off. But a perfect sadhu means one who acts properly and is attempting to control their minds, making progress in Krishna consciousness, that follows strictly the Krishna conscious practices in the orders of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. And a perfect sadhu, well, let's talk about what a sadhu is according to Lord Kapiladeva. Tatikshava Kurunika Suvidasa Videhina Majata Shatrava Shanta Sadhava Sadhabhushana. These are the ornaments or the qualities of a sadhu according to Lord Kapiladeva. Tatikshava, he's tolerant. That means if someone attacks you or someone loves you, you're sama. You're equal. In other words, you don't give special favors to someone who does something for you, scratches your back, or you don't hate someone who opposes you. The tikshuva. And you, whether it's hot or cold, you know, the basic philosophy in Krishna consciousness in the Bhagavad Gita. Matrasparshas tu kunteya asikoshna sukadukada. As Bhagavad Gita teaches us. Happiness, distress, heat and cold, pleasure and whatever, pleasure and pain. One must learn to tolerate these things. So that's the tikshuva. Karunika. And karunika means the sadhu must be merciful. Like we pray to the Vaishnavas every day, vancha kalpa turuvishta, kripa sindhu. The mercy must have no limit to it. The ocean has no limit to it. So the mercy of a Vaishnava should have no limit. Kunika. And then Sura Saravadehinam, he's a well-wisher, friend of all the living entities. All living entities means in all species of life. Yastu Saravani Bhutani Atmane Ivana Pashati. In other words, he doesn't exploit, like we were talking about before, how when people eat a certain way, it teaches them implicitly a method of exploitation. That's what it's the, that is actually the foundation of our modern society, the mentality of exploitation. So instead, we're a friend to all living entities. Suvada sarvadehinam. Sarvadehinam means all dehinam. All people or all entities that have a body. Sarvadeva. And then Ajata Shatrava, which is actually the opposite flip side of the same thing. Ajata Shatrava, he has no enemies. In other words, you're friends to everybody and you're not an enemy with anyone else, with anyone. You have no enemies, which means you don't hate anyone. You're simply trying to help people come to Krishna consciousness. Of course, if you're a second class devotee, you do avoid those who are envious, but you don't hate them. You still pray for them. If someone attacks you, someone hates you, someone blasphemes Krishna consciousness, avoid them. Like the plague. But you still pray for them. Like the devotees prayed for Nimai Pandit to become a devotee. Although Nimai Pandit, that's Lord Chaitanya, was challenging them and defeating the devotees, they prayed, my dear Lord Krishna, let him become a devotee. So, Jata Shatrava Shanta. And peaceful in all circumstances, that means equipoised. Ajata Shatrava Shanta Sadhava Sadhavushana. Anyway, so these are the qualities, so we should aspire to have these qualities. And of course, the best way to manifest these qualities is not an artificial thing. It's not simply that you put your body in a certain way and you act in a certain way. But you chant the holy names purely. Like today's Ekadasi is an advertisement. And so it's a special day to increase the chanting of the holy names. Chanting more than 16 rounds if you have an opportunity. I generally chant 64 rounds on Ekadasi, so it's an opportunity to delve further into Krishna's name, Namachintana, which Krishna's name has everything, and that's the best association. And the name has been given to us by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. So we have the Shuddha Nama. It's up to us whether or not we chant the Shuddha Nama, or we chant Nam Aparada, you know, offensive name. The name's not offensive, but we're chanting offensively. Anyway, so these are some points. So any questions or comments? We've got about a half minute left for class. A lot of topics we covered in class. Yes? Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, devotees, they shouldn't ask any money for reciting Bhagavatam. I mean, actually, that pollutes the whole atmosphere when you ask money. People can give donations. I mean, obviously, if you're going to have a retreat, you've got to ask money for people to stay there and get prasadam. That's a different thing. But the person who's preaching should not be whipping out his credit card machine as he's preaching, like you're having some of these Christian things. You know, I was just researching about Christian faith healers. And then part of their thing is that, you know, if you want to heal, you got to give $1,000 or whatever you want to give. You know, then it pollutes the whole atmosphere when there's a demand for money. Of course, there can be reciprocation, donation, things like that, but it's a brahmana never requests money for his preaching activities. Very important. So, all glories to His divine grace, Shri Prabhupada, Shri Prabhupada, Shri Prabhupada.